Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
We're in full force for 2014 as we kick off our show with luxury brand editor Eve Thomas discussing fantastic locales around the world that you should consider visiting on your next vacation. Everything from an African safari to hanging out in Iceland. Dr. Louise Aki drops in to chat about prescription medication and how important it is to know what you're ingesting into your body. Social media expert Patrick Charles talks about a new music service from Dr. Dre, and we wrap things up with author Janice Bastani telling us how we can be the blessing in this new year.
Capture your need for sound.
We're happy to welcome back to the show Eve Thomas, who has an awesome job as an editor in magazines for Mercedes-Benz, Bombardier Jets, and of course other luxury brands. Eve has had the fantastic opportunity to travel quite a bit, and in the last year has made her way to some wonderful locations around the world and is here to tell us all about them. Eve, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Happy to be back.
So, you know, we're happy to chat with you today. I know that you'll be able to shed some light on some, you know, wonderful locales around the world that people should try and visit at some point in their life. And I wanted to start by the one that caught my eye, I think, the most, which was the African safari. What was that like? And do you have any tips for someone who would want to do such a thing?
Right. I was lucky enough to go on safari in Tanzania, and I went to three completely different lodges. It was amazing. It was like something out of The Lion King, which I joked about at the beginning, and then by the end, it basically is The Lion King come to life. It's sad that's my only reference point, but there you go. It's just amazing. You know, elephants, zebras, baboons, just side by side everywhere. It's like something out of a painting or, yeah, like, you know, going. My only reference point before that was Park Safari, which... Not quite the same. It really feels like the cradle of civilization. There's nothing like it.
Wow. And when you were there, I guess I want to preface this question with, did you have to get like a bunch of shots and all that stuff before going to Africa? Because I've never traveled there. So I'm just wondering, is it like a bit of a production to sort of get yourself there first?
I did. There are a few. It depends what country you're going to, obviously. It depends. Some people will have gotten shots in high school that will hold over till now. But there were a few. It didn't cost a ton, and frankly, it was very worth it. And the shots will last the rest of your life. If you want to travel to India or Thailand after,
okay,
you'll be set.
And when you were there at these three different lodges, what was it like sort of accommodation-wise and, I guess, food-wise?
Accommodation. So, like for one of them, it was glamping. Really, if you've heard of glamping, it's glamorous camping. It's a terrible name for a wonderful thing. This was it. This is basically the definition. You could technically pick up this whole camp and take it out. It's the Sanctuary Kusini, which is in the Serengeti. It's actually the only hotel or permanent accommodations in the entire southern Serengeti. So it's really in the bush, in the rough. But still, you know, I think the hot water was on twice a day, and they told you you had to go to the main lodge to get Wi-Fi. But there's literally, you're wanting for nothing. And there's also another funny thing at a lot of these places. You can't, after dark, you can't walk back to your lodge. It doesn't matter how nearby it is, just because there are animals everywhere, or there are potentially animals everywhere. So I only saw a warthog on the path, but you do have a guide to bring you back to your room.
Wow. And did you see like lions and all that kind of stuff too?
We saw everything. It's really interesting in the Serengeti itself, even though there are only probably, we saw maybe two other jeeps the entire time. We were driving for like an hour. They will sort of radio each other and tell them where, you know, where things are. And there's also a really interesting parallel to the animals, of course, is the drivers and the guides. You know, they can track these animals. What they've been trained to do, they spend their whole lives doing these, some of them. So they'll just think, okay, you know, they'll look at dung, or they'll think, okay, there's a watering hole here, and zebras go to the watering hole around this time of day. And so if we haven't seen zebras yet, they'll kind of just be like, okay, you want to see zebras? Let's go. And I mean, the animals aren't you know, they're still afraid. They're not tame, but sometimes it felt like they basically had them off stage, said, "You want to see some elephants?" and kind of just prodded them out, pushed them out, you know, like it was something fake. But it really is just, you know, animals hang out in certain places. They hang out with different kinds of animals. They hang out with different kinds of trees. And it was just, and sometimes it was a guessing game. We didn't see rhinos, sadly, but they're very endangered. So.
Okay. So moving from the heat to a colder climate, I guess, I think this is fascinating. Iceland, what was that like? It sounds like, you know, from some of the description I was reading, that it's almost like a place from another planet.
Oh, yeah, for sure. In fact, it's actually been in quite a few movies that are set on other planets or in other worlds, like Prometheus, or I think the latest Thor movie was filmed partly there. It's just, it's like being on Mars. It's you get out and, you know, there are no trees. They basically took all those down hundreds of years ago. It's lava rocks. It's another planet. And it's a very lovely planet, though. And the town is very, Reykjavik is very Scandinavian. So it's just beautiful design with amazing nature.
And what do you do, like hike a lot? Like what are some things to check out?
A lot of people go there to hike. A lot of people go there to be outdoorsy. I'm not the most outdoorsy person, but I did manage to do quite a bit of walking. There are sort of the typical tours that people do. The great thing about Iceland is you don't have to be super prepared before you go, because there are so many options. There's so many tour groups, things like that, which sounds like a bit of a nightmare, but frankly, you can go to the most popular sites there. There's these amazing natural geysers. There are really, really famous waterfalls. And there will be, you know, a decent amount of people there, but that means 50 people, 100 people. And if you've ever been to the Louvre, that's nothing. There's enough space for everyone, and you can go off on a little walk and be completely alone, or completely alone with whoever you're there with. And it's never shoulder to shoulder. There's so much space. It's such a luxury.
And in your opinion, what was the favorite spot that you saw while you were there?
Well, the most interesting thing I did was going horseback riding. And if you enjoy horseback riding, you have to do it. These horses are, they're amazing Icelandic horses. They're so protected that you can't have any other kind of horse in the country. You can't bring a horse in. And once a horse has been taken out of the country, it cannot return, just because they don't want to mess up the bloodlines. They're just so smooth, and you can just travel up mountains. They're so sure-footed. If the weather doesn't accommodate, it can be roughing it, but honestly, these horses can get through anything.
Wow. And is there a time of year, Eve, that people should go to Iceland, or does it not really matter?
You know, I went in fall, and it was already it was getting pretty cold. If you go in the summer, it's really interesting because, of course, he's got a lot of daylight, as most of those northern. It's, I think it's the northernmost capital in the world, Reykjavik. I'm not 100% sure.
Okay,
don't quote me. But so if you're not into sort of roughing it, the summer is probably better. But apparently, in like the dead of winter, that's when real Icelanders just party, because they have to, because they've got nothing else to do. So if you want to sort of really hang out with the locals, winter is apparently the time to go.
Wow. And just a question, I'm not sure if you can answer this one just sort of came to me, like, about how many people are in that, you know, capital? Is it fairly large or not really? Like, what would you compare it to?
It's tiny. It's absolutely tiny. God, I wish I could look it up right now. I think it's, I want to say 500,000, but I could be completely wrong.
So not big, not obviously like a Toronto.
Oh, no, it's tiny. It really is. It's everyone sort of knows everybody. And I think there's actually, now there's quite a big number of expats there, people, artists, things like that. But no, the population of the country is tiny, and the capital is even tinier.
Did you run into Bjork?
No. In fact, she wasn't, you know, I was expecting to see like big pictures of her and stuff like that, but no, they're, as much as they rely now on tourism, they're not very cheesy, not yet.
Okay, very cool. Now, moving again from, you know, colder climates to warmer climates, I thought this was interesting. I never would have even thought about this. Scottsdale, Arizona in the U.S., what's going on over there?
Right. It's a bit random, but in a way it's not. It's wonderful. This is great. It's a bit tough in summer, but if you're still in the winter months, it's a wonderful place to go. In fact, Frank Lloyd Wright famously went there, I think, in the 30s because he was getting pneumonia or he was getting cold in the winter. And he went there for, like, the really dry heat to help cure him. And he built this really amazing campus and home called Taliesin West. And it still works today as an architecture school. And it just, you can tell, like, he went there because it's so dry and so warm. And it really kind of clears you up. The other interesting things, a lot of people go there is for spas. And pretty sure it has the most spas per capita in the U.S., if not the world. They're everywhere, at least destination spas. Pretty much you will not find, you know, a little room where you can get a massage and maybe a face mask. Every single hotel has, like, a huge spa complex. They've got really cutting-edge stuff. They've got really amazing Native American therapies. Anything you want, you can get there, and you often don't have to leave your resort.
Wow. I know you mentioned that in the summer it's pretty warm, so you sort of need to figure out what you can handle, I guess, right?
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, you know, you'll go to these places and they will have air conditioning and stuff like that. But I did find I'm Canadian, and I would sort of, like, get in a car and go somewhere, and the driver would say, like, oh, do you want some water? I'll be like, oh, no, I'm fine, you know, that sort of polite instinct. And they're like, no, have some water, because if you don't have some water, you're going to dehydrate. So people know how to live their lives there. You don't go out at noon. You figure out how to structure your day so that you're, you know, you go to the market early in the morning, you go out for a nice late dinner, but during the day, that's when you get your mud wrap inside.
Okay, gotcha. Fantastic.
I know, it sounds really excruciating, right? It sounds really grueling.
Tough life over there. Now I want to move you back across the pond for a bit. What's going on in England?
So there are quite a few. There's been this movement. I mean, the Olympics got a lot of attention, blah, blah, blah. But in the late 2000s, or the around 2008, 2010, a lot of London's sort of grandest dame hotels got these amazing makeovers. They basically, some of them took 2 years, some of them took 5 years. All these just incredible, basically this is where hotel service began. They all got millions and millions and millions of dollars of renovations and started opening in most recent couple of years, and they just are amazing. They're beautiful. They don't feel faded at all, and they're 5 stars. You know, it gets thrown around a lot, but this is literally what 5 stars means. And so I stayed at the Connaught recently, which is in Mayfair, which is, I think a lot of people have been around there, but not a lot of people have been there. If you go to Oxford Street, you know, probably one of the most hellish streets in the world. It's just, there's so much, but there's so many people, and it's a headache, and, you know, colors and things everywhere. It's just noises. If you go over a few streets, you get into Mayfair Village, which is a really, really posh area, but it's kind of quiet streets. There's all the luxury brands you can find on Oxford Street, but they have their sort of smaller flagship stores. It's a beautiful, quiet little area for very rich people.
Wow, that sounds amazing. Can you give us an example? Because I know you said that 5 stars sort of gets bandied about quite a bit, but, like, tell us something that you know, you would experience at this place.
Oh, God. Okay. Well, it's that kind of that level of luxury where it's all very subtle.
Okay.
So, you know, I think I sort of mentioned to the concierge offhand wanting to go somewhere else, wanting to go to the spa somewhere else in town. And it was just kind of a conversation. Mm-hmm. And I left for breakfast, and then I went back up to my room, and there was sort of a handwritten note, and there was a map where I had mentioned wanting to walk, and he had drawn out the route and stuff like that. You know, like, they give you stuff before you know you need it, or they give you stuff you don't ask for. Beautiful, amazing touches. I mean, there are the sort of concrete things in the actual hotel, which is there's a 2-Michelin-star restaurant. There's the Connaught Bar was voted the best bar in the world a few years ago. It's really amazing. It looks like this sort of, like, Art Deco palace. You know, it's not a very flashy hotel, but I think for a lot of people that's the sort of true meaning of luxury, is you don't really need to see and be seen. Like, you've kind of already arrived if you're
right
there.
That's awesome. Well, Eve, before I let you go, last question. You know, people have been listening to your comments on this. Which one would you say people should go to the first if they are to sort of plan a trip this year and are saving their pennies? Where would you want to send them?
Oh, my God. You know, I think for a lot of people, after I mentioned going to Iceland, they sort of their eyes widened and they said, I've always wanted to go there. And I have to say that, I mean, these were all amazing. I only have good things to say, but that was the one that I didn't really know anything about and I wasn't sure about my expectations. And I've literally never heard a single person come back from Iceland and not just have amazing things to say, not just have had, you know, the trip of a lifetime. No one has come back and thought and said, you know, it's okay. They've all just been totally bowled over. So that is maybe your surest bet, and there are a few ways to do it on the cheap. So
awesome. Eve, thank you so much for this. We really appreciate it. We can't wait to have you back on the show.
Thank you. I hope I travel enough to come back again.
I'm sure you will. That is luxury brand editor Eve Thomas. You can follow her on Twitter at Eve Loves Luxury, and of course on our website, KellyAlexanderShow.com.
Capture your need for sound.
Medications come in all kinds of forms and shapes and are ultimately there to help us feel better. But have you ever had questions about prescription medications, their reactions, and what they really do? Joining us today is pharmacist and author Dr. Louise Aki. Dr. Aki has over 32 years of experience working as a pharmacist in hospitals, nursing homes, and community pharmacies. Dr. Aki, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thanks, Kelly. It's
so
great to be here.
So thank you so much. And I guess the first question, you know, I think we've all taken some form of medication at some point in our lives, whether it's some sort of antibiotics. You know, my niece right now, she's on that for strep throat. People have, you know, migraine issues they take medication for. But it seems like a lot of people are getting sick or having bad reactions to their medications, which actually is my niece. They're having problems getting rid of the strep throat because apparently she is allergic to penicillin as well as the little baby brother to penicillin, which the name escapes me at the moment. So they're having a rough time getting rid of this.
Medications, particularly prescription medications, they're very powerful, Kelly, but they're also unpredictable, which is what you're finding out with your niece. If I give the same medication to myself and you take the same medication, we are often going to have a very different reaction. And because these medications are so powerful, they can cause problems. And the most important thing is to be able to recognize that it's causing you problems and to speak up so that it can be taken care of.
And is there, you know, a right way versus a wrong way of taking medication? Because I know, for example, you are usually, you know, told by the pharmacist how to take the medication. But for example, earlier this year, I actually got a bit of a scare because I had this terrible head cold and I ended up taking, again, the name escapes me, but it was basically a decongestant to sort of keep my passage open. And I did what I was sort of told, but I guess I was sort of at the limit of taking the medication and it ended up giving me a heart flutter. And it took me like 3 months of going to acupuncture to get rid of that damn thing. And I was so mad because I had done what was sort of prescribed. And then, you know, my GP, when I told him about the heart flutter, he's like, oh, well, you OD'd. And I was like, well, no, I didn't. I said I was at the limit, but I wasn't overdosing. And I was so upset about the stupid heart flutter. So I feel like there can be right and wrong ways to take medication.
Not just that, but there are medications that react differently in you.
Okay.
So you are maybe sensitive to some side effects of medication that other people are not. And some folks are exquisitely sensitive to most medications and need a fraction of the dose of a medicine to do the job. And as we get older and are on more medications, this becomes a real problem because older people are more sensitive to medicines than younger people. And that is reflected in the fact that they end up in the hospital or in the ER with problems related to their medicine. 13% of people who are admitted to hospitals are admitted because of a problem with a prescription medicine.
Wow, I had no idea. That's crazy. How do you know, or yeah, like how can you start figuring out, because I always hear that you are supposed to be your own health advocate. Like you're supposed to really be in tune with your body and sort of, you know, really try to figure out what's going on. So that you can get the proper help. But how do you start to figure out that maybe, you know, this or that doesn't work for you or, you know, it's supposed to be or the dose is not correct? Like, how can you sort of figure that out safely?
First of all, understanding how medicines do what they do. Think of medicines as like a key, and that key has to fit into a spot in your body in order for it to work. There are medicines that don't work in certain people, don't work at all. And other medicines that create an overwhelming response, either an allergic response or some other kind of side effect that is toxic. So one of the first things to do is to keep a list. This is one key, Kelly, for your listeners. If they do one thing starting today, they will get much safer medical care, and that is to keep a complete list of every prescription they're taking and every allergy or adverse reaction to medicines they've had in the past. So, for example, your niece, mm-hmm. who has an allergic reaction to penicillin, she wants to make sure that anytime she goes to the doctor or to the ER or to the hospital, that that is listed on her medication list so that no doctor who doesn't know about that accidentally gives her the same thing.
Right.
See how that dangerous that could be?
Yep. I'm actually also allergic to penicillin, so it scares the crap out of me. So I can understand that that's a frightening thing. And also, you know, what are some of the signs, for example, that you may be having a reaction to your medication? Because, like, I didn't know that I had a reaction to penicillin until I was in my early 20s, because it was only after an issue with some teeth business that I had an infection there that the dentist gave me some, and then I broke out in this crazy rash.
Unfortunately, penicillin, you can develop an allergic reaction to it at any point. I'm not currently allergic to penicillin, but my next time that I take it, I could develop an allergic reaction. So it's something that you're always going to have to be watching for. One of my patients is a 65-year-old lady, and she raises miniature horses and large dogs. And she had been started on a cholesterol medicine by her heart doctor. And a few weeks after that, her shoulders started to just ache, and her wrists started to throb. And when she mentioned it to him that, well, maybe it's the medicine, the heart doctor blew her off and said, no, it doesn't do that. So she was on the verge of thinking, it's old age, arthritis, I'm going to have to sell the farm, you know, I'm getting old, I'm in my late 60s. And her daughter had been reading my book.
Okay.
And said, Mom, speak up, don't give up. Dr. Aki says to get another opinion, ask another doctor. So she asked her family doctor, hey, you know, this is what's going on, could it be my medicine? And the family doctor said, let's do a trial off the medicine and see what happens. 4 days later, shoulder pain gone, wrist pain gone, unbelievable.
Wow.
And they found another cholesterol medicine that's working great and is not giving her those side effects. Being aware and being willing to speak up. I can't tell you how many people suffer in silence for years thinking that something is old age when it's really a medication and can be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
People need to speak up. They need to be partnering with their care so that if the doctor doesn't know how it affects you, if you don't tell them, they're going to think no news is good news. And some doctors just are too busy to really pay attention. You need to speak up and keep speaking up. And if it doesn't, if you don't find somebody you can understand, some of us can't understand what our doctors are telling us, find another doctor.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is pharmacist and author Dr. Louise Aki. For more information, make sure to check out her website, askdrlouise.com, or takemedicinesafely.com. Where is the best place to go and ask for help if you are confused or unsure that you are taking the right medication for whatever health issue you have? Because it seems like, you know, obviously the internet is such a great thing, but there's also lots of misinformation on there as well.
That is part of the reason why I wrote my book, Why Dogs Can't Eat Chocolate, How Medicines Work, and How You Can Take Them Safely. Because I've seen for years how people don't understand enough about medicine, and people in the medical field, we make assumptions that they know what we know. So when we try to explain something, there's a missing piece. There's an underlying piece that it is so important. And once you know that, then the rest of the rest of the information that your doctor is telling you, your pharmacist, is available by either through books, in newspapers and media, on the internet, makes more sense. It's really important to understand how medicine affects you, because if you're taking a medicine that's going into your body, that is your health at stake. Medicines are powerful, but they're unpredictable, and understanding how to work with that and to speak up and how to do that is so important.
I think a lot of people are or get intimidated when they're in the doctor's office, especially because the doctor, I would say for the most part, always looks, you know, harried and has, you know, 97 patients waiting to go. So how do you mentally prepare yourself to not be brushed off by their attitude, potentially? I'm not saying all doctors are like this, obviously. But how do you make sure that you ask the right questions while you actually have his or her attention?
Wow, that is so powerful, because it used to be they had about 10 minutes with you, 10 to 15 minutes, and now the actual face time is down to just about 5 minutes. One of the most important things is have your list of medicine up to date and bring it with you, because the last thing you want is for them to spend time going over your medicines with you if you don't have that ready. That time that you have to talk to them face-to-face, it'll be used up. You want to be able to have your questions ready to go. You know, how are things are going, if you're having any symptoms, that type of thing, be ready to go. And writing them down is the best thing. I can't tell you how many people are telling me as they see the pharmacist afterwards, they go, oh, I had this really important question and then I didn't write it down. I thought, oh, I'll remember that for sure. And in the stress and the busyness of the appointment, they forget. And then they got to make another appointment. But having that list of medicines, of everything you're taking, and, well, you know, it's also important, and people don't do it very often, put down your supplements, your herbal products, your over-the-counter products, because the best doctor in the world, if you keep them in the dark, they could give you something that is the last thing that should be mixed with the medicines that you're already taking.
That's really good, because I think a lot of people forget about or think it's not important, like if they are on, you know, something from the health food store, you know, and don't think it's important. When it comes to like health, because obviously, you know, a lot of people, if they were more fit or more healthy, they could be off medication. So what's your advice on that? Like, because I think some people in this society are so easy to like, oh, they must have a pill for that. Like, what's your take on that, Dr. Aki?
They've been searching for years to find a pill that does for the human body what exercise does, what regular physical activity does. It's amazing, and there are enormously large and well-designed studies that show the benefits of regular exercise. And it doesn't have to be hardcore. It's walking, it's gardening, it's dancing, it's getting up off the couch and moving. But as a society, we tend to want to take a pill and continue to not change any habits, to continue to watch lots of TV or sit. And we are working smarter rather than harder, but our bodies are paying the price.
And what would you like to say to, you know, my listeners right now? Like, what would be a key piece of advice that you'd want to leave them with so that they, you know, are prepared and are aware of the dangers of medication? Because again, like, I never thought taking this decongestant was going to give me a heart flutter. And I was so mad after and was disappointed in myself for letting it happen, I felt. So what do you want us to keep in mind?
That medications are powerful. And whether it's prescription medicine, over-the-counter medicine, even herbal products and supplements, the fact that they do something means that they change something in your body. And all of us are different. These medicines are unpredictable. Our doctor cannot guarantee a particular effect. It's going to be up to us to pay attention to your body, listen to your body, and speak up. When something doesn't feel right and you started a medicine recently, speak up, don't give up, and don't put up with it.
That was amazing. Dr. Aki, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kelly.
That was pharmacist and author of Why Dogs Can't Eat Chocolate, Dr. Louise Aki. Again, for more information and to check out her book, make sure to visit her website, takemedicinesafely.com.
KellyAlexanderShow.com.
We heard a lot about digital sales sinking in 2013, and the trend will most likely continue in 2014. Jumping into the streaming game now is Dr. Dre's new service called Beats Music. The service promises to be different from Spotify, iTunes Radio, and all the other services. But how different is it? Patrick, we are so excited to have you back on the show. Happy New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year. I'm excited to be back.
This is our social media expert, Patrick Charles, of course, and he always brings us up to date with all the new stuff in technology. So first of all, I guess, who's behind the service? Is it Dre himself or his team or what?
Well, there's a whole team of people behind it. And, you know, most importantly, there's a lot of money behind it. But there's Jimmy Iovine, last seen on American Idol, but he's like a record industry guy from back in the day, from being basically an intern for John Lennon and Bruce Springsteen and, you know, producing those guys finally. But Trent Reznor for Nine Inch Nails. Because the service started out as something being called Daisy.
Okay.
And it morphed into Beats Music because, I mean, that's the most recognizable brand, right? Of as you know, as far as electronics and stuff that the kids like, as they say, right? Beats headphones, enormous. So Beats has put a lot of dough into it.
And, you know, they're claiming, like you said here, that there's going to be differences. Are the differences really going to be enough to set them apart?
Well, this is the big test, you know, because the thing is, they have a lot of what they call curation, where they have what they call music industry experts, you know, Dre, Trent Reznor himself, and a bunch of people who will be working there, picking tunes and making playlists on the fly. Like, it's a very social service.
Okay.
That's what they're going for, because that seems to be something that's missing. You know, Twitter Music tried that. Twitter Music tried to be social, and it hasn't really – it just hasn't taken off.
Yeah. Oh, you know? Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Yeah, so people aren't really sharing stuff and getting other people onto the service, because obviously that's what everybody wants, right? They want as many subscribers as possible. And so Beats Music is saying it's going to be super social. That's what they're looking for. They want people to be trading stuff, talking about it, and basically keeping the service alive.
Why no free model like all of the other services that are out there in the same genre?
Yeah, that's pretty interesting, right? Because most things that you get, there's usually you can get, you know, ad-supported and free. So you don't pay anything, but you have to listen to a couple of like 30-second commercials in between the songs. You can only skip maybe 3 tracks per hour, maybe 6 tracks per hour, that sort of thing. You have that with services like Songza. But what they're doing is, first of all, they don't want to have any ads at all on the service,
okay,
which I will say is a good thing, because artists make more money when there's no free service. Because obviously, you know, instead of having to pay out to advertisers, right? They share the money directly with the artist, so everything that goes into the pool is going straight to the service itself, and there's nothing else being split up. There's no sort of there's less overhead in a sense,
mm-hmm,
you know. Mm-hmm. So that's what they're looking for. So I mean, I think it's a good thing, but you know, is it enough to get kids to forget about YouTube? That's a tough question.
Okay, and what's at stake for the industry with this?
Well, that's the thing, a lot, because having no free model, because, you know, everybody else, like, there's services like Deezer, and everybody boasts about how many subscribers they have, right? Everybody has tons of subscribers. Like, I have a Deezer account, but do I pay for it? No, because I use RDO and I use Slacker, and I don't actually use Deezer. I just have an account. So they count me as a quote-unquote subscriber, but I'm not paying them anything. So, you know, people will say, oh, we've got, you know, 20 million people have signed up. Spotify is very guilty of this, because when you break it down to, like, the paying subscribers, it's a lot less. So what's at stake is the fact that they could really embarrass themselves if they go, well, only, like, 50,000 people signed up. Which, you know, sounds like Obamacare. But, like, you know, if they only get, like, 50,000 people to sign up, because you have to pay, they'll give you, like, there's a free preview.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can get, like, it's either 10 days or a month for free when you first sign up. But after that, you know, you're kicked out. You got to pay $10 a month for it. So a lot is at stake, because they want to see if they can get people to pay for music. People won't download music. They don't really want to own iTunes anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's over that now. They just want to hear the song. So if you can go on YouTube and hear the song, that's good enough for most people. So that's what they're up against. They're up against the fact that, do people really want to invest in things, you know, both sort of mentally and financially, to be able to listen on a regular basis?
What's your take, Patrick? Do you think this is going to work, or is it just going to be, you know, in the jumble of things?
I think it's going to get a lot of press. Mm-hmm. It's launching on the 21st, but only in the US.
Okay.
So it's launching very soon, and I think it will get a lot of press. They've got over 20 million songs, right? But I just think that they're not going to be able to get people to sign up. I think they're going to wind up sort of restructuring it and letting you have a free model in the end. That's my long-term, you know, that's my long-term guess. I think a year from now,
mm-hmm,
you know, Beats Music is going to be like, oh, you know, free, because everybody's advertising free.
Right.
And, like, it's weird, because I have a theory about the whole free music thing, because everybody says, oh, it's because of downloads that, you know, people don't want to pay for anything, illegal downloads, I should say, mm-hmm. right? When we first had Napster, yeah. In 1999, everybody downloaded everything. And since then, you know, the industry has basically disappeared, right? Mm-hmm. But I actually think there's two things. I think that's part of it. I think I should say three things, because obviously YouTube is another part of it, because now people like a video element to it. When they hear a song, they want to like see the song at the same time.
Right.
The other thing I think is that we've come to a point in the history of recorded music where everything is available. Because if you think about it, right, if you're really into music and you're 50 years old, mm-hmm. okay, you may have a few cassettes lying around your house.
Yep.
You probably have quite a bit of vinyl mm-hmm. that you've kept, and you probably have a ton of CDs, and you probably have, you know, a good number of iTunes in your computer.
Right.
So if you are the 15-year-old child of that person, mm-hmm. why would you ever pay for music? Because if you go like, Dad, I heard about the Beatles. Are they good? Yeah, I have all their vinyl downstairs.
Right.
Dad, what about the Psychedelic Furs in the 1980s mm-hmm. where they were big? Do you have? Yeah, I have some of their CDs. So it's kind of like you're accustomed to people growing up now. It's everything is there because someone has bought all of the biggest stuff over the years. And so now what comes out, a lot of the hit songs, I mean, maybe you'll just stream a song on iTunes because you like it. You know, you heard about The Fox mm-hmm. and you thought it was really funny, so you watched it on YouTube. So that's kind of all you need, because everything else, it's like it's been purchased by someone else already. So I really can't see the industry recovering in a sense, because there will always be the people who will buy albums
yeah.
and buy music. But I think that number will shrink, because it's like it's all been purchased and it's all around somewhere.
Lots to think about. That's crazy. Patrick, thank you as always for this. This is really good.
Anytime.
That is our social media expert, Patrick Charles. Learn more about him on our website, kellyalexandershow.com. And of course, follow him on Twitter @GetPatrick.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
As we head into the giving season, we often feel a sense of empowerment to help those who are less fortunate. But is it possible for us to feel that same empowerment to truly lend a hand and touch someone's heart, not just during the holidays, but throughout the year? Life coach and author Janice Bastani believes it is possible, and she's here to discuss how easy it can be. Janice, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you, Kelly. It's so nice to be here with you today.
So, Janice, what does it mean to, quote-unquote, be the blessing?
Well, you know, being a blessing is more than just doing it at certain periods or specific holidays during a year. We need to be a blessing every minute of every day, because people are walking by us, hurting and in need, and we need to actually see them. It's not that when, you know, the goldenrod flyer comes home in our child's backpack, or when we step over the person that we see every day on our way to work or in the subway or by the bus station, we've got to make a conscious effort to help those who are hurting every single day. And that takes a specific mindset.
And how do you get yourself into that mindset?
I really think it's about taking off the mask, if you will, taking off our blinders, because we have become thoughtless. We just ignore these people that are out there in front of us. We've got to start lifting up our fellow brothers and sisters that are really hurting. There are people hurting out there who don't have jobs and who don't have enough money. They're deciding between gas and food on the table, and they're making really, really hard choices. And those of us that do have something, we can share what we have, and that is very important. We are becoming polarized, and we are becoming hard-hearted. And that is a terrible place to be.
Are we becoming that way because of society and sort of just like, you know, it's just like we're almost being conditioned, I guess is the word. Is that what's happening?
Well, I think that may be a little bit of it. Here in the United States, you know, we're coming up on the anniversary of when John F. Kennedy was assassinated. And on the news here, a lot of the replay of the assassination and all of the stuff that went around there is playing a lot here. And one of the things that he was a global phenomenon, if your listeners will remember that. And one of the things is that he was young and idealistic. And all of us who are attracted by people who are like that have this idealistic dream that there is hope in our future. And when someone like that is killed, the hope dies with them. And I think that right now in society, in the global community at large, that is what has happened. Our ideal of hope has actually, you know, diminished and has been dashed. And that's not just here in the United States. Yes, there are wellsprings of hope around the world, but a lot of people are giving up. And we are becoming the takers and the entitlement instead of lifting up. You know, one of the famous quotes from John F. Kennedy was, "Ask not what your nation can do for you, but what you can do for your nation." That has, like, been flipped upside down on its head. And we need to revisit that again as a global community and figure out what it is that we can do to lift up our brothers and sisters.
I wanted to ask you about disconnecting from other people, because it almost feels like this is a disconnect. Is that, you know, what's going on? And are we so consumed with I, or I and my family? Is that, you know, a big part of it?
Well, yeah, it is. One of the things today that I was noticing that the new words that come out every year in the dictionary, you know, the added words that come out, this new word called selfies. Have you heard of it? S-E-L-F-I-E-S, selfies.
I have done one. I have done them. I've done them, Janice, for work.
Okay, so what is that all about? That's about self, right? It's where you take your camera and you pose for yourself and you put it out for the world to see, right? It's about self. It's about me, me, me. It's not about somebody else. Now, I'm not condoning that. Don't get me wrong here. But again, it's narcissistic. It's a self-absorption. It's not about someone else. It's about me. It's all about me. In the 80s, it was all about the me generation. It's like we never grew out of that. And we tend to hunker down, if you will. We pull in and we close the drapes and we shut the door and we want to just stay in our own little cocoon and just take care of ourselves. That's survival instinct. I would like to just, I want to read you something that I got out of a book here, and it's something Walt Disney said. Listen to this. There are three kinds of people in the world. There are well poisoners who discourage you and stomp all over your creativity and tell you you can't do something. Then there are lawn mowers, people who are well-intentioned but self-absorbed. They tend to their own needs, mow their own lawns, and never leave their yards to help another person. Then there are life enhancers. Those are the people who reach out to enrich the lives of other people, to lift them up and inspire them. We need to be the life enhancers, and we need to surround ourselves with others who enhance the lives of others. How great is that? We all need to do that.
Yeah, and that's a very good sort of thing to keep in mind, a good description, if you will. Joining us on The Kelly Alexander Show is life coach and author Janice Bastani. For more information, make sure to check out her website, janicebastani.com. I wanted to ask you about being in tune with others and knowing that you can make a difference and you can help. How do you start to flip the script a little and look outside of your selfie, if you will?
Well, there are six of the most encouraging phrases in the world. Do you have any idea what they might be?
Not at all.
I love you. Dinner is served. All is forgiven. Keep the chains. You've lost weight. I believe in you. They're simple and they're very encouraging. You know, it's about having the heart-to-heart relationship. It's about helping another person. If you've got an extra place at your table, invite somebody else to sit down with you. Somebody next door needs someone to talk to. Somebody across the street would just love to talk about themselves. As you're celebrating in this holiday season, invite your neighbor over. Invite somebody from work that doesn't have a family to celebrate with. It's a small thing, but it means a lot to somebody. There's a single parent somewhere who doesn't know how to cook a holiday meal. there's a single parent somewhere whose children don't have gifts. You know, they're small things, but you can make a difference. In my article that I wrote on my blog this week at janicebastani.com, I'm talking about, you know, be the blessing Thursday, Monday, be the blessing in January, February, March. Just pick a day or a month and do something. You know, pass it around the office. You can do it. It doesn't take a lot. And creativity runs rampant once someone starts the ball rolling. You can do this.
Can you talk to us about why you think people feel the need or are aware to give around the holiday season? And I'm not saying that other people don't do that sort of throughout the year as well, but it seems like the pervasive plan of action is to give around the holidays. Maybe if there's a huge, you know, event like the typhoon that has just struck the Philippines. Sure. But throughout the year, you know, I don't know that people really give.
I think because we put a magnifying glass on the holidays. That's when everybody's end of the year giving comes. I mean, we put a big magnifying glass on the holidays, and there's this push, push, push. Also, it's when the season really changes, right? Big coat drives come into play because the weather, the temperature plummets, and people start getting cold, and they're outside. It's no longer warm. People need gloves and coats and socks and shoes and hats and scarves. We put a big spotlight on these times. And we also have that tug of the heartstring, right? Whether you're celebrating, you know, Hanukkah or Christmas or whatever your celebration time is, there is still this nostalgia around this time of year. And people just get this warm, fuzzy feeling that they want to share and they want to give. And they open their purses and they start to give. And there's also, you know, like the Salvation Army is out there ringing their bells, and you've got holiday music playing, and that actually crescendos at the end of the year, and people buy into that. And that's a mindset again. You don't have that in May.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see that in September.
Right. And I wanted to ask you about community, because, you know, I think there's probably a lot that people can actually do within their own community, but they might not even know their own community. I know I don't. I'm so wrapped up in what I sort of have to be doing for the city at large that I, you know, for the radio station that I work in. But my own sort of town, I don't really know a lot. Although I do make sure if I have extra clothes that I give to my hometown, like they all get my extra clothes or whatever. I make sure I don't donate it down in the city. I give it back to my community. But like, you know, how do you get into that mindset of learning about your community and knowing when and how to help?
This one is so easy. You walk or you put your key in your mailbox. And my local community, which is very small here in Northern California where I live, in the East Bay, every single week I get at least 4 or 5 flyers from my local small community. And there are flyers talking about local businesses. I get a postcard at least 1 or 2 during this time of the year that say, we need X. Can you give us X? They want old cell phones. They want old computers. They want your shoes. They want your clothing. They want your household goods. There are ads that say the holiday shopping guide. They tell you who is selling what. The Boy Scouts and other groups are, you know, selling Christmas trees, and their food bank is asking for food. There is no lack. It's staring you in the face. I have seen people very well dressed go to their mailbox, pull their garbage can over, and they rifle through their mail, and they throw that stuff right in the trash, and they go right on their way. They don't even look at it. It's because we have a mindset of thoughtlessness, we have our blinders on, and we are totally oblivious. That's why you don't know what's going on in your community, because you don't have your eyes open and you're not looking.
You've just given me lots of good ideas. That is awesome, Janice. And what do you think someone should do to try to bless someone in their life? Like, what approach do you want us to take?
I think, you know what, for me, I can't tell you how many times I just get an inkling like, you should just pay for them, Janice. just say, I'm paying for the person behind me. I can't tell you how many times I just get a sudden little jab of the heart, a pit in my stomach. You know, I don't know how more to say it other than that. Do what you feel led to do. And most people aren't listening. We are listening to the yammer of what's going on and the noise around us, and we've forgotten to listen to the little still voice inside us. It's the small things. You know, we think that if we write the check or we pick up the bag of groceries and we buy it and we pay for it, we're done. But that's not what it's about. That is giving, but that's really not truly giving. It's when you touch another person truly, truly, truly. Let me give you a really good idea. I have a hairdresser and a woman who does my nails, right? All of we women, we have somebody who does our nails, mm-hmm. or somebody who cleans our homes maybe, or babysits our children, or where we get our hair cut or colored. And I'm wondering if you asked someone in the salon or someone that works with them, what could I do for that person that would really, really touch their heart? What you would find out. And then you did it. Now, let me tell you what this one thing is I'm going to do for the woman who does my nails, and you're going to find out that this is really quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
She loves to cook, and I have this little can that looks like a spice can, mm-hmm. and all it says is love on it. I'm giving her a can that says love. There's nothing inside it, but everything she bakes and she cooks, She's a woman from another country.
Mm-hmm.
She does with so much love. And I'm giving her that can with nothing in it, and all she's going to do is shake it over everything she makes.
Okay.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
About it's going to knock her socks off?
Mm-hmm.
I told her about this a long time ago, and she goes, I want one of those. I cook everything with love. It'll just knock her socks off. It's something very small,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But it has a lot of meaning to her.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
It's probably not what you think it is. And for someone else, it might be something entirely different. It might be taking them somewhere and doing something with them that's totally unexpected. I have another friend who had a mother that treated her very terrible as a child. And my gift to her is to take her out and do something her mother should have done with her when she was a teenager.
That's amazing.
The woman is 50 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But she needs that experience. And I'm willing to do that with her. That's not the kind of gift you buy at the store in a gift certificate or a coffee gift card, and I plop it in an envelope and give it to her. It's something so much more. It's an experience that she will remember the rest of her life. It
right.
takes more from you.
That's amazing. And that's really a good thing to... It's like the small things almost. Even though it might be big to them, it might be small to you, but it could make all the difference in the world.
That's exactly right.
Excellent. Janice, thank you so much for this. It's always so amazing to speak with you.
My pleasure, Kelly. Always a pleasure to give to your audience.
Fantastic. That was life coach and author Janice Bastani. Again, for more information and tips, check out her website, www.janicebastani.com. Thank you so much for hanging out on the show this week. We always appreciate your time, and we are raring to go for 2014. I want to thank my guests this week, Eve Thomas, Dr. Louise Aki, Patrick Charles, and of course, Janice Bastani. Here is your thought-provoking quote of the week, this time coming from Alvin Toffler. The illiterate of the 21st century will not be those who cannot read and write, but those who cannot learn, unlearn, and relearn. Thanks again for hanging out on the show. If you have any comments or questions, please drop me a line, kelly@kellyalexandershow.com. Of course, make sure to check out our interviews, which are on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/kellyalexandershow. And of course, you can follow us on social media, on Twitter, @kalexandershow, on Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show. And again, all the information you need on our website, kellyalexandershow.com. Have a great, great week. You and I will chat soon.